Good morning. We'd like to welcome you to the Thursday, June 28th study session for the Mesa City Council. I note that we have Channel 11 working in real time today, and so the theory that a woman broke the cameras on Channel 11 is not correct. I just need to point that out. I had heard that. We need to excuse the mayor. He is out of town, and he will be returning in time for our council meeting on Monday. We have seven items on the agenda this morning. The first is to review the items for the agenda of the June 2nd regular council meeting, which is Monday evening. And if you'll go to your agenda, which was revised on 6/26/07, we'll go through that a page at a time. And we're going to test the theory that the shorter the agenda, the longer the meeting. We're going to see if we can do away with that theory. Okay? We're disproving a number of theories this morning. I tried that on Monday night. You guys wouldn't let me do it. So, all right, we'll move on to page two, because page one looks like it doesn't have really much of anything on it. Anybody got anything on page two? John?
Mayor, I'll just comment that item 5A is the case that you saw before over at Standage and Main Street. It's been back through P&Z. We've revised it. It will be coming to you with a recommendation for approval now from P&Z. Also on that same agenda, you'll have the vacation of Standage. And we'll put those as companion items when it's on the 9th for the hearing, so you'll see both those together.
Well, I guess a summer vacation is a good thing. That project is the Main Street Station project, and the feedback that we're getting from the neighbors has been very positive.
There's still some that are concerned, Mayor or Vice Mayor, but overall it is much better.
I understand that there are still a few remaining concerns, but it looks like a lot of it has been addressed. It came up the other night when Kyle and I were at the Mesa Grande Community Alliance meeting, and the feedback was quite positive. All right, page three.
Okay.
Councilmember Jones.
On 5B, because I've done some recent work for some of these folks, we just pull that so we avoid any appearance of a problem.
Sure. We'll take that off consent. Mr. Griswold, do you have a question on that one?
That same one. I was just saying there was some neighborhood comments I'm beginning to receive. I was probably going to request to take it off anyhow, so that'll give us an excuse to look at it and answer some people's questions before it goes to us.
Okay, this is the introduction of the ordinance.
Yeah.
And setting July 9th for the date of the public hearing. Anything else on page three? Page four? Page five, we're still doing introductions of ordinances. Looks like we're going to have a lot of ordinances on that July 9th meeting. A steel mill and a hospital. Unrelated, but...
They're unrelated.
Page six, I think the question on the hospital is, what will the wait times be on the emergency room, right? Isn't that the question of the day today? Page six. We have an annexation on 5K. Councilmember Rawls.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. I'd like to have items 6A and B taken off the consent agenda, please.
Sure. And those are dealing with Dial-A-Ride and fixed route transit. Rex.
Just a positive notice on 5J. That's a new Marriott hotel being built across from Falcon Field Airport. So it's going to be a very good addition to the neighborhood.
We're pretty excited about the amenities we're getting up on the 202. Page 7, if you'll... 6H, we had backup materials on that one. Everybody okay that they have enough information on 6H? All right.
Yeah.
And 6F, Town Center. I'm sorry. Mr. Rawls.
To finish up.
I was just going to say, what conflicts do we have on 6F, given the fact that it's modifying the fees and charges, and it involves the Mesa Town Center Development Office, but it doesn't really involve Town Center itself?
Vice Mayor, I don't believe it was the conflicts. I think it was the vote from the committee.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
That's what.
Okay. So, Mr. Rawls?
7A, very briefly, there was reference in the report to a traffic study, but it doesn't didn't seem to have any kind of empirical data associated with it. Do we know how often this problem arises on Pomeroy in particular?
Vice Mayor, Councilmember Rawls, was down out here where observations were made by staff on a regular basis. And in addition, we've conducted some accident studies at similar sites. This one had a couple of crashes that appear to be related to the day labor folks. Maybe two in the last 4 years. Doesn't necessarily indicate a trend. But our concern there is the potential, I think, because there's so many people and they do wait in the street on occasion. So that's the issue.
Okay, I was just, we're making a decision here based upon statements that don't have any empirical data behind them except the anecdotal statements, and I just wanted to know if that was the nature of the study or not. The other question I have is on, there's a reference in the committee meetings reports, and I think that John was the one who gave this answer to a question by Kyle, that the police can cite somebody for stopping on an arterial street, but you can turn onto a side street and block the street, and that's not a violation of any state or city code.
I think that'd probably be the discretion of an officer if they'd be obstructing traffic. You can understand that on an arterial with the higher speeds and the higher volumes that you're more likely to obstruct traffic if you would stop in a through lane. However, on a side street, if somebody pulled close to the curb, you could probably get around them pretty easily. I think that's the difference.
I guess that's why we're thinking of imposing these no parking, no standing, no stopping is because people can't get around, and I'm assuming that a person cannot stop his vehicle on a side street like Pomeroy without risking a violation of the law, or without constituting a violation of the law and risking a citation.
Correct. What we've seen out there is when the folks pull up on Pomeroy to look for help, they don't always park neatly next to the curb. They'll just stop on the street.
Right.
And what we get is pedestrians from both sides of the street running to the vehicle, essentially.
Why wouldn't enforcement of the don't stop in the middle of the street statute that already exists not achieve the same result as making it illegal to park along the street?
Well, I think what we're trying to capture here is some folks park adjacent to the curb where you would normally park. That isn't as big of an issue. However, we still have the pedestrian issue. Others park very close to the intersection, making it difficult to turn onto that street or to get around them to turn onto the arterial. Some of the folks park in what is a through lane.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest concern is the ones that park too close to the street or too close to the arterial or away from the curb. If they would park next to the curb, we wouldn't have as big of an issue.
Right.
But we would still have pedestrians coming from the far side of the street to that side.
Right.
And so the further away they get from the intersection, the more chance a driver has to stop, to react and stop in time. That's okay. What we're looking
at. I just wanted to get an understanding for what we could and couldn't do there now. I'll leave it on consent for now. I'm going to think about it over the weekend, but I just wanted to clarify a couple of issues. Thank you.
I have a couple of questions on that one. Are you going to paint the curb red? Are you going to put signs up?
We'll put signs up, probably 2 to 3 signs on each side of the street. The sign will indicate no stopping, standing, or parking. The reason this one is agendized the way it is city code requires a council to authorize a parking prohibition. However, there's another ordinance, the stopping and standing component is the authority of the development, so the previous development services manager, which was Jack, and that can be done without council action. We wanted to bring it to council and to the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee because it's a sensitive issue and we want to make sure everybody understood what we're doing out here.
One of the issues we've had in the past is that people have wanted us to enforce the anti-loitering laws, and that becomes, most people think, well, there's a law there, you can enforce it. Actually, and Ms. Spinner, you can remind me what the success rate is of people trying to enforce loitering laws, because I figured it out one day because I used to say, okay, well, this is a law, we can enforce it. I was standing with a friend talking on the sidewalk and thought, am I now loitering? At what point did I become a loiterer as opposed to just somebody who was talking to a friend?
Yeah, Vice Mayor, members of the council, you're right. It's very difficult. And in fact, we don't have an anti-loitering with regard to sidewalks. Sidewalks are a public forum. and typically people are allowed to stand, talk, and meet on the sidewalks. So we do not enforce an anti-loitering ordinance with regard to sidewalks.
So when would a loitering law come into play? If you're on somebody else's private property, then that would be trespassing, wouldn't it, as opposed to loitering?
Yes. If you're asked to leave and then you refuse to leave, then they could call for trespassing. I guess I would have to go back and check the statute and see exactly where and when does loitering apply. I can tell you we do not apply it to public sidewalks.
Okay. And another question, you talked about those signs, and I'm not meaning to be facetious, but will the signs only be in English?
That was our intent. It's to address the drivers that would stop and pick them. We could consider bilingual signs, if that's the pleasure of the council. Perhaps we post it in English first and see if there's a need, and then we can add a supplemental sign.
Okay, well, let me think about that. Councilmember Griswold.
Just following up on that, you know, if you get into sidewalk rights, as I remember from a little legal that I know, you'd have to ban picketing, you'd have to ban any free speech on sidewalks. It gets to be, the courts have not upheld anything that I've known on there. As you come off 45 miles an hour off a main street and you swing around the corner and there's a car stopped dead in front of you, it's really hard to react. And so I believe in, that's the parking, even if they're right next to the curb, when you swing around, you don't expect to be a car stopped 5-10 feet from you. So this just moves it up so it's safe, clearer zone, you can see what you're doing, and I believe that doing it in English is the right way to do it. So I'll be in favor of it.
Councilmember Whalen.
Same topic, different subject. What does it take for the council to address a no parking situation in other parts of the city? Do I make a request to you, Dan, through Chris, to conduct a study, or does there have to be three council members? I know to get on an agenda you have to, but I have a situation in my district at Central Christian Church that you're familiar with that that is becoming more controversial, and it's during the hours of Saturday and Sunday. What would it take for us to do a study of that location?
I think we're going to have a
I'm asking philosophically.
Issue. You're correct, Vice Mayor. We can't discuss that specific issue since it's not on the agenda. But typically, under the charter, if council has a concern, you can either meet with staff and seek information and obtain information. But if you are asking for a specific
issue,
you would talk to the city manager, and the city manager would then pursue that.
But I do think that back to the original question, which was how do you get a traffic situation changed?
Studied.
I think that there was a discussion going on about changing how we do no parking.
Right. Yeah.
So,
right.
You know, and that was to talk, and you said the previous person, Jack Friedline. So, Jack, who's that person?
If I could, Vice Mayor, we did have a conversation, presentation to the Transportation Infrastructure Committee.
Tick.
You just have to keep saying.
And we'll have a conversation on that at the study session Monday. Also, when we talk about a parking prohibition at the Commons, we'll preface that with our presentation that we gave at the Tick and the direction we've been given to go back and take a look at some ordinance changes to allow the transportation department the latitude to do many parking prohibitions henceforth. And we showed maybe I shouldn't go too far into this. I apologize. But we're working towards, with the direction of the TIC, to bring it back to City Council. And again, if anybody has a concern with a traffic situation or parking, any citizen can call our transportation department, and we respond to those people in kind.
So the answer to Mr. Whalen's question, a lot of it will be coming on Monday afternoon.
Yeah. Yes, a lot of it will.
Okay, I'll wait.
Okay. Other questions on this item?
Not on this item, Vice Mayor, but just on item 6G, mm-hmm. will be deleted from the agenda.
Okay. All right. Anything else on page 7? All right. We'll move on to page 8. 8A, Kyle, that's coming out of your committee, and I think there have been some changes that have happened in our regulations since this came forward, so can somebody just kind of give us a brief synopsis on where things are on 8A? Tammy.
Hey.
Good morning.
Good morning. Vice Mayor, council members, this case has a lot of moving parts to it. This was, just real quickly, this was presented to the TIC in March. At that time, the TIC recommended that we move forward, permit utility service, water only.
Can I step back for one second? Mm-hmm. People who are watching on TV don't even know what we're talking about at this moment, so let's just talk about what it is for a second. This is a request for water service outside of the city limits of Mesa.
So yes,
now
it is.
With that context, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay. It is located on 77th Street and Plymouth, and it is a single-family residence. And this gentleman came forward to the TIC. He qualified for water already, but he did not want to improve the streets that were adjacent to his property. And his appeal process was to the TIC. So he went to the TIC. They recommended going forward, allowing him to build Plymouth Road after the close of his permanent, or when he closed his construction loan and could incorporate that into his permanent loan. And we were asked to go work with legal and come up with some kind of agreement to do that. And we did that. In the interim, the annexation law changed, which now says that he can, or the policy or direction. So he is now able to annex, and he is willing to annex. So he's going to be pursuing that while he's doing this, but he needs his water sooner than the time frame it would take to annex. So we're still looking at doing a utility service agreement. However, he still does want to be able to get in front of you and talk to you about the requirement to improve the streets. As you can see, he got a letter in 05 when we did not require that. Then he got another letter in 07 when we did require it. Part of the recommendation that we've put together is that we would take an in-lieu payment to be paid no later than February 1st. The reason we've backed off from asking him to do the improvements and we are now taking the in-lieu is also in the interim, we have found out that the county is not willing to or does not want to permit these roads to be built because this particular road is not in their fund. They don't have the funding for the maintenance for this particular road. So we backed off from that and said we'd take an in-lieu for Plymouth Road only.
And remind us on the in-lieu payments, how long does an in-lieu payment, is it forever, or is there a certain amount of time by which the end of that time, it hasn't been constructed, that the money gets returned?
No, it does go into an account, and it is there forever, and it is for that property only. So once we get enough properties along an alignment, then we can take that money and construct the road.
But we can't take the money and use it to build somebody else's road?
No. Okay. It has to be built that road.
Okay. Other questions on this? So we're going to be asked to determine whether or not he gets interim water service. He's going to speak to us about wanting to not have to construct the road or make the in-lieu payment.
Correct.
He wants a waiver of both.
Yes.
And the county doesn't want the road constructed.
Correct.
All right. Scott.
What was the reason for the two different answers between 05 and this year for the letter? In 05, he wasn't required, at least the letter said he wasn't required. Was that an error or was there a rule change between 05 and 07?
There was a rule change. In July of 06, council changed the rules and now started requiring single family residents to be responsible for their road construction as well. Prior to that, they were not.
Okay, so he was getting good information mm-hmm. when he was asking it and then the policy with the council, the policy had changed.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else on page 8? On 8.1, the electric issue is coming back again, hoping I can persuade at least one of you to rethink your position on that or maybe talk the mayor into my way of thinking. Anything else on page 9? All right, we're going to go back to the pink agenda. And our next item, we actually only have three appointments this morning, so I'd like to read them, if you don't mind. We don't normally do that because we frequently have so many, and I would have been nice if we could have read the names of all the appointments to boards and committees the other day, but I think there were something like 55, so we didn't do that. But this morning, You're being asked to approve Mike Garcia to go to the Board of Adjustments, Steve Wood to the Economic Development Advisory Board, and Chell Roberts to the Planning and Zoning Board. And Mr. Roberts, I categorize as a two-for-one. He used to live in District 1. He's lived in District 6 now for a while, so he knows both District 1 and 6. So I told Scott, since I don't have a District 1 rep on P&Z, we're sharing. Do I have a motion on this?
Yes.
I have a motion and a second for approval. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. We'll move on to acknowledging the receipt of various boards and committees, Economic Development Advisory Board, and Parks and Rec Board.
Move for approval.
I have a motion and second for approval. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. Hear reports on meetings and or conferences attended. Councilmember Whelan?
Attended the MAG meeting last night, Regional Council for the Mayor, and interesting enough, there was a very informative ADOT presentation on the number of transportation projects over the next 5 years. It's unbelievable the number that we're talking about, and we're still on schedule for design of the Gateway Freeway, I believe, to open somewhere around 2016 is my understanding, which seems like a long ways away, but it really isn't. And then also a lot of talk on the reliever, the I-10 reliever, and the controversy, and a lot of talk on the South Mountain 202, which has already started to go to environmental. It's about a two-year environmental process, so we may end up getting the environmentals done and then have to go back and deal with the neighbors of the Ahwatukee area as to whether that's going to be done or not. So it's an unwielding process. The other was a report from MAG on the air quality report, the legislation that passed out of the House and Senate this year. Leaf blowers now have new stringent requirements. There has to be training on leaf blower operators, if you can imagine that. Commercial leaf blower operators, and you can't blow debris out into the roadways anymore. So, Chris, how many people are you going to employ, or are you just going to call a county on those situations? It's really kind of crazy as to what that requirement's going to be. I asked him if they would reconsider moving some of our monitoring locations so that we could have a more fair representation of what our air quality is, and I learned that apparently they set some air quality devices in the worst location possible on purpose. Why, I don't know. We're in the desert. I don't understand why that we're penalized for dust as much as other people are who aren't in the desert, but that seems logical, and therefore the EPA doesn't work that way. And then finally, the last piece of legislation that was passed under the air quality is the county was given an exception for certain developments to build roads to less than county standards. So I don't know what that's going to do to air quality situations, but the Home Builder Association lobbied at the last minute, and they got that provision in there. So we may find some roads in our unincorporated areas that are being constructed less than county standards, and what do we do then if they decide to come into the city?
And Councilman, that's a really significant issue that unfortunately didn't get addressed in the legislation, because the effort by MAG is to go and begin paving some of the dirt roads that are out there, but at the same time, the county and the developers could be right behind us opening up new dirt roads, and so you never really get ahead of the game. So that's a very unfortunate situation.
There's also some legislation there that will require people that own vacant lots to put down some sort of compound material to keep the dust down. That's going to be a huge issue for some open areas. I think there's a lot of education that's going to have to be resolved over the next few years on this process. And the reason for it is that we continue to be in violation of federal air quality standards and are subject to losing federal transportation monies. And that's my report.
I think Rex had a question for you.
I was just intrigued. Is that less than county road chip seal, and which is a dust-free service, or is it a dirt road you just plow and let it blow?
The report I was given was just those words in particular. I have not seen the legislation as to, Paul, do you know?
be a very interesting one to follow.
Scott, I'm sorry.
I'll answer to anything this morning, Councilmember. Vice Mayor, Councilmember Whalen, the actual bill that allowed certain areas to be developed by less than county standard was a standalone bill that was passed by the, or that was pushed by the Central Arizona Home Builders Association. This has been a reoccurring issue year after year at the legislature that we've tried to educate them on the difficulty that we experience when we annex these areas as municipalities and the challenges that that poses. But unfortunately, some of those cries have not been addressed by the legislature. So we're going to continue to educate on issues of lot splits, of developments of less than county standards. And we actually feel things are moving in the wrong direction in the last couple of years with some legislation that the home builders have actually pursued and other entities as well. So that it's an education process. But Councilmember Griswold, I can't remember the exact standard, that the less than standard, but I'll be glad to find out that information and get that to you.
Thank you.
Chris, do we have a Scott on the agenda at some point to kind of give us a wrap up on the legislative session and what all the implications of that are for us?
That's what we do now. That's a very good idea.
He'll only need about 2 minutes.
we can try to put that on an agenda. Sure.
One other point, yes. I forgot to mention too, for those of you that have off-road vehicles, that also the legislation will also prohibit all-terrain vehicles operating off-road in areas that are not privately owned, I believe, right, in any public area. So that's going to be a huge situation for those of us that have responsibilities out in the outer areas. It's a huge amount of legislation. It took 15 minutes for the kid to read it, just the summary, and I'm just trying to understand the whole thing.
Is this Senate Bill 1552 that we're talking about?
Vice Mayor, yes. And one thing, I know Christine Zalanka and our folks in Environmental Services have really been following the minutia of the legislation, and they were involved, as I was, in meetings and in dialogue throughout the session. So I know Christine and her staff have really been looking at what we need to do as a city for education and compliance and such, and we'll be bringing any of those back. But we've already initiated that process of implementing some of the public information and others that will need to go into this.
I think Scott's trying to get Christine on the agenda with him.
I'll be more than happy to share that issue. So, absolutely.
But in response to the, it sounds like no more pimp my ATV is what you're telling me as part of the. Okay, Councilmember Jones.
Yes, in the last week I also had a MAG meeting, Human Service Coordinating Committee, and a lot of that discussion was referring to our situation that we had a couple years ago where we had 36 people die of heat-related issues in Maricopa County. And they have heat relief stations throughout the valley, mostly in Phoenix, where indigents, transients, and stuff can get out of the heat. There's been big drives in Mesa and all across the county for bottled water to distribute, and there's a lot of activity going on there to minimize the impact that we're right in the middle of right now with this heat. And also, I had intended to share with the council pictures of the trip I took to Charlotte of the Whitewater Park, but on the advice of our city attorney, because we have already called an election and had an agreement, that it would probably not be wise because somebody could construe it as campaigning for the issue. So for those and there were residents who were expecting to see this morning, but for those who would like to see those pictures, I can share them with you personally. I just cannot use city resources to do it.
Well, I'll refrain from discussing or voting on your slideshow. thank you very much. No. Thanks for the report. By the way, that's the point about the heat is a good point. There, people who are elderly are most particularly vulnerable, and I just want to remind people that we have libraries in Mesa, we have other public facilities that people can go to if they need someplace. It's amazing to us to recognize, I think, for most of us, that there are still residents who don't have air conditioning in their homes, and the heat can really get to people. We're expecting it to be 110 today. Councilmember Griswold.
I was at a very interesting meeting last night at Los Andes, about 100 residents on a new 50-acre hotel office building complex there. Very interesting dialogue about 10 o'clock at night from 6 o'clock. Veterans, I made the tail end of the Veterans Parade meeting. They're moving ahead and they're gathering funds and they're looking at the Grand Marshal and the keynote speakers. And the Chamber of Commerce had some great news on new business coming to Mesa, and also saw it today in the headlines. We're now the 38th largest city in the United States. We're 39,000 people behind Atlanta, apparently. So we're growing fast.
We have a few more restaurants. So we'll do that.
Councilmember Summers, did you have anything to report on today?
Underground.
Okay. You know, everyone here goes to a lot of different. I was at a grand opening yesterday of a new Walmart super neighborhood market up in at Lindsay and McKellips, and went to a Chick-fil-A opening the other night. And frankly, if all of us sat up here and told you every meeting that we went to, the meetings would go much too long. So we don't do that, not because we're trying to be disrespectful, but because we're trying to be respectful of everyone's time. Everybody up here puts a lot of time in that nobody ever sees. That takes care of the meetings or conferences attended. Scheduled meetings and general information. Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. Just first one announcement. This is, I believe, Mr. Hewling's last study session with us today, so we want to...
Is that why that smile out there? Wow, 200-watt smile.
And we will be having his retirement party, which the council's invited to, Monday, July 2nd. From 3 to 4:30 p.m. at the Mesa Contemporary Arts Building, the Mesa Arts Center. So we invite you to attend that if you're available. And speaking of July 2nd, following that, we will have a council meeting, study session and council meeting. As we mentioned before, we are going to be reviewing our policies regarding traffic studies and no parking policies. I think we're probably going to start at 5 is what we anticipate, and we'll look at that. I think that's probably pretty close about much time. Do you think we need more time than that, Jack?
Maybe
4:45, yeah. Okay, 4:45 gives a 30-minute opportunity to look at that. Okay, 4:45, let's do that then. No study session on July 5th. So really only two meetings in July, July 2nd council meeting, July 9th council meeting, then the break. And the first meeting coming back for council will be Monday, August 13th, which will be a council meeting. We will have, even though the meeting's on the 13th, we will have a packet out to the council on the 3rd of August, which is a Friday. So I'll give you approximately 10 days, 9 days to have that information. And certainly you can call staff if you have any questions about the items on that agenda.
And you'll start... significantly early,
we'll
like
start the
4 o'clock
early.
Or something, or even depending.
We'll see what the agenda looks like, 4:30 or so, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Pre-scheduled public opinion appearances, I don't have any of those. Are there any items from citizens present?
I have no requests, Vice Mayor.
All right, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
We'll move.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
You're adjourned.